Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Never Alone, Volume 4, Story Number 1. One night, I was lying in bed when I realized I needed to use the bathroom. Getting up, I shuffled down the hallway to our small upstairs bathroom. I noticed that the bathroom door was shut, but the light was off, so I thought nothing of it. I went to open the door, but I suddenly heard a loud sound of someone clearing their throat. I figured it was my uncle who had recently moved in with us and decided to wait for him to get out. I waited in bed for 10 minutes and finally decided to just go to sleep. A few hours later, I woke again and went to get out of bed, when suddenly the bathroom lights began to flicker madly. I stepped closer to the hallway when I heard a loud crash in the bathroom and wondered what had happened. I peeked behind me and looked into my brother's room to see him fast asleep. Figuring it was my uncle again, I walked up to the door and said, "Uncle Gary, what are you doing?" There was no reply. I stepped back and heard a faint gurgling noise. Listening for a moment, I realized it was my uncle snoring fast asleep in his room. Terrified, I ran into my brother's room and climbed into his bed for the remaining 3 hours until morning. When morning came, I asked my mother if she had used the bathroom. She said she hadn't. So I asked my stepdad, and he told me he had gone to the bathroom. So I asked him why he hadn't responded when I asked him what was going on and why he was flickering the lights. Then he asked me, "What are you talking about? I used the bathroom downstairs, and I didn't do anything like that." Since then, we have moved out, but every night I still check the bathroom before using it. Next story. I live out in the country, but not like the deep woods or anything. We have neighbors that live close by, although there is a cemetery about a mile away, walking distance. About 6 or 7 years ago, I decided to start riding my bike for exercise, just to the entrance of the cemetery and back. One early evening, I decided to go bike riding, and I decided to go straight rather than turn towards the cemetery. When I was coming back, I saw this old green and white striped Chevy pickup. There was a pretty young guy driving it. I didn't hear the engine, but it was coming right at me. Then it turned all of a sudden towards the cemetery. There was no dust flying up from behind it or anything. This took place during the summer. There should have been dust and the sound of a motor, but nothing. He started to loop around, and I pedaled my bicycle as fast as I could. I have never been so scared in my life. It was just so creepy. Needless to say, I never rode my bike out that way ever again. I never saw that truck again until 2005. My sister and I were outside. It wasn't quite dark yet, and we saw the same truck coming down the road. It reached my mom's house and then disappeared. We kept waiting and waiting, but nothing. We were pretty freaked out. I had just finished watching a spooky show with her, and we got to talking about scary stuff. I mentioned the truck incident to her, and then we saw it. For 3 nights in a row, it would come down the road with its lights on and its overhead lights with one light out. It would come down the road and then just disappear. Well, on the fourth night, with no sight of the truck, we decided to find the truck. Fortunately for us, we didn't find it. I have not seen that truck since then. And I guess that's pretty lucky after all. Next story. I grew up in a very haunted house in Hazel Green, Wisconsin. There was a lot of strange things that happened during the 18 years I lived there. The one thing that I remember the most was when I was a sophomore in high school. I was lying on my bed in my bedroom upstairs and had just fallen asleep. All of a sudden, I felt my mattress sink a little bit by my feet, as if somebody had sat down on it. I immediately assumed it was my sister trying to steal my cell phone that I had sitting on a shelf at the edge of my bed, so I just ignored it and tried to go back to sleep. I then woke up about 5 minutes later because I felt that weight lift off my bed as if somebody were standing up. I got up and immediately walked out of my room to confront my sister, as I thought she'd taken my cell phone. When I opened her bedroom door, she was asleep. I went back to my room and my cell phone was still sitting on the shelf. I thought it was a little strange, but was tired, so I laid back down and went to sleep. I was only lying there for about a minute when I felt the weight at the end of the bed again, as if somebody had just sat down. I got so scared that I didn't even want to move. All of a sudden, a little girl's voice said, "Hey, hey, are you awake?" I just laid there in horror, not knowing if I should move, and too afraid to look. Finally, I jumped out of bed and ran all the way downstairs. Although I've never been confronted by that little girl again, one of my friends said they were standing by my door one day and looked out and saw a little girl standing by the tree in my front yard. I don't know what happened or why she's there, but I'm just glad that we moved. Next story. One night, my uncle took me, my sister, my brother, my cousin, and my other uncle to an old church graveyard on a long, skinny dirt road way back in the woods. There I witnessed things that I will never forget. I was only 6 or 7, and it was a full moon. You could see everything real good on the dirt road. We arrived at the old church and graveyard between 12 and 1 a.m. My uncle told us the story that if you touched all four corners of Grady Harrison's grave, he would come out and give you his fiddle. My sister and cousin were a lot older than me and a lot braver. They decided to get out of the van and touch the four corners of his grave right when they got to the grave. The clouds covered the moon just like in the movies, and we heard something calling all of our names. We started to see orbs pop up and move in the woods in all kinds of directions. We called for the girls to come back to the van, but they didn't hear us. And when I looked up, I saw Grady Harrison right there. It was like a white shadow or fog, but very detailed. He was playing a fiddle and dancing a jig. Finally, they saw the ghost and ran back to the van. But this story isn't over yet. The van wouldn't start. Not only that, but at the old church, there was an old walking cane hanging out the window at least 5 feet and turning all different directions. And the orb started getting closer, and we also heard strange noises. Finally, the van started. It was brand new, and we were heading out of the graveyard. All the kids were in the back of the van, making crosses with pens, and we looked out the window, and yes, there was a demon. It had 4 legs, a black body, a black and red face, with a fireman kind of like a lion's mane, and fire in his eyes. And it was running right beside the van. I looked right at it, and I felt something that literally made me sick. Once we made it to the paved road, it was gone. I've seen ghosts before, and we've gone to a lot of places. But after that, I never went looking for them again. I believe in God, but after witnessing what I did that night, I also believe in the devil and all the bad things he produces. So, if you're ever around Op, Alabama, just on the other side of Kinston, if you want to believe yourself, just go visit Harrison's graveyard on a full moon night. But don't say I didn't warn you. Next story. When I was a freshman in college, I had what is to this day the most terrifying experience of my life. One night, I had been up hanging out with friends until around 1 a.m., when I decided it was finally time to get ready for bed. I lived in a freshman dorm with a long hallway of bedrooms and common shared bathrooms in the middle of each floor. I walked into our floor's bathroom and started getting ready for bed, brushing my teeth, washing my face, etc. While I was washing my face, I instantaneously had the wind knocked out of me and struggled to catch my breath. Nothing physically hit me, but I felt such a tremendously overwhelming feeling of evil behind me that I literally was paralyzed with fear. I couldn't move. For several seconds, I couldn't breathe. I remember the pressure in the room changing and my ears literally popping. I knew that something was behind me in that room. And I swear to you, I knew that if I would have looked into the mirror to see what was behind me, I would probably be institutionalized. It was that scary. I basically sprinted down the hall and into my room once I could move and breathe again, literally hiding under my covers and pillow until I finally fell asleep quite some time later. Approximately 6 or 7 years after that, I was talking with another man who graduated from that same college 3 years after I did. We had a lot in common and had served as a teacher's assistant for the same professor. This man knew a bit about my family's history with ghosts and spirits and asked me to share some of my stories. When I told him the story of my experience in that residence hall, he was stunned. He told me that the professor we both had worked for had told him years earlier that the campus had been struggling with a demonic presence at the same time I had my experience. He also said that our professor had an identical experience to my own in his office late one evening. I have never felt pure, powerful evil like that before, nor have I ever felt as scared in my entire life. Part of me wonders what I would have seen had I looked up into the mirror, but I'm mostly thankful that I did not. Next story. This happened in October, a few years back. My husband's step-grandfather passed away. Earlier that month, I'd given birth to a baby girl and went to the old funeral home located in downtown San Antonio, Texas. The name of it is the Rodriguez Funeral Home, and this is where my husband's grandmother had the services. It was around 4 p.m. on a Wednesday that we went to pay our respects. As we walked through the chapel doors, we were greeted by his relatives. They were glad to see my daughter as well. We walked through the aisle to go towards the casket, and I had this weird feeling for some reason. My husband knelt at the altar where the casket was to pray, and I turned and asked my husband's grandmother to watch my daughter, and I turned towards my husband, and I put my left hand on his right shoulder. And next to the casket, there was a wooden pedestal with a picture frame made out of brass and his step-grandfather's picture in it. The picture was facing towards the relatives, and when I started praying, the picture rubbed against the wooden stool and turned towards us. My husband looked at me and said, "Did you see that?" I said, "Hell yeah, I did." But he told me to be quiet. I turned away to go to the restroom, and I entered the restroom with my daughter. In the mirror, there was a man standing right behind me with old clothing from the 1800s. I just froze and started praying like we Catholics do, and he was gone when I turned to look for him. As we left the funeral home, right away I told my husband that I didn't want to go back to that funeral home anymore, even if he had loved ones that had passed away. Next story. In 1982, I was doing some carpentry work for a farmer in Elk Point, South Dakota, on a house that had been moved from town to his farm about 6 miles from there. Almost as soon as I started on it, I noticed things occurring that I couldn't explain. I would be working in a room and go to get some materials, and the lights would be off when I returned, and then the lights would be on in rooms where I hadn't been. I worked there for several days, and these things kept going on. On the fourth day, I was working in the kitchen, putting up paneling, and I had a ladder sitting in the middle of the room with a box of panel nails sitting on the paint shelf of the ladder. Suddenly, the ladder started sliding across the floor, and it tipped over, spilling the nails all over the floor. I could smell jasmine perfume very strongly. The room had gotten very cold, and it was 90 degrees outside. I had not felt the house shaking, nor were there any trucks going by. I picked up the ladder and got down on my hands and knees to pick up the nails, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a shadow moving from the bathroom to the bedroom. Then I heard the stairs squeak, and I got up and went to the stairs, and then to the upstairs bedroom. I could not see anyone, so I went up the stairs and looked through the bedrooms, but still, no one was there. I went back downstairs and finished picking up the nails. A few minutes later, the farmer came in to see how I was doing. I told him about the strange things that had been going on, and he started laughing. He said, "You just met our ghost." And then he told me a story about the house and why it was moved. He said the house was originally in town, and the old woman that lived in it had killed herself by hanging in the basement. He took me to the basement and showed me the beams that she hung herself from and where the neighbors found her. No one had been able to live in the house since she had died, as they couldn't handle the pranks she would pull on them. We went back upstairs, and he told me that she had never been violent, just that she liked to turn lights on and off and move things around. He told me to talk to her and she would leave me alone. Then he told me that when they moved the house, they thought the ghost would stay in town, but she didn't, and now he was stuck with her. As he left, he said she would not harm me, but she would continue moving things around and turning the lights off and on. I continued to work on the house, and a few days later, I finished the kitchen. I saw her shadow in the bedroom, looking towards me, and I said, "I hope you enjoy your new kitchen." I was there for almost a week after that, and I didn't have any more problems with the lights or anything else. When the job was done, and I had other work, so I moved on. But I talked to the farmer several times, and he told me that the old lady had not bothered the people that were currently living in the house. He had no explanation as to why. Believe me, this scared the heck out of me, and I hope I would never have that type of experience again. Next story. I was a long-haul trucker for many years. In December of 2004, I had a delivery in Winchester, Virginia, and a second stop in Washington, D.C. At my first stop, I was delayed and didn't get unloaded until after 2 a.m. I left Winchester heading east on Highway 7. Around 2:30 a.m., I came to the intersection of Highway and Route 601 near Bluemont. At a gas station, I pulled in to check my map of Washington in anticipation of my delivery. The station was closed at that hour. There was virtually no traffic going by, and it was a cold, moonless night. While I was sitting there, someone knocked on my door, startling me. I jumped and turned off my interior light so I could see outside and rolled down my window. A man was standing there in an airline flight crew uniform. He had four stripes on his shoulder epaulets, indicating a captain. He was without a jacket on a very cold morning. He climbed up on the step of my cab. He smelled like he had bathed in kerosene. When he got close to my face, I could see that his cap had the TWA insignia on it. "Could you give me a lift?" he asked in a voice that seemed raspy. I assumed it was from the cold. I was really taken off guard. It was odd. I was in a dark rural area on a freezing night, being asked by an airline pilot wearing short sleeves for a ride. I asked him where he was headed. "I work for TWA. I gotta get to Dulles to work at flight. Please give me a ride. I'll pay you," he responded. "Well, how about I give you a ride to the next open store where you can call a cab?" I offered. "Okay, thank you," he mumbled. He said that we could descend. I didn't know what he was talking about, but I didn't want the guy to freeze out there. "Go around and get in," I instructed. He climbed down and shuffled around the front of the truck. When he passed the first light, I was struck by the fact that he seemed to have long sideburns, a la Elvis. When he continued on to the right, he totally vanished. I don't mean faded away. He just ceased to exist. I jumped down out of the truck and looked all around with a flashlight, even under the truck. He was just not there. As I continued on towards Washington, I remember something odd. TWA had gone out of business over 2 years ago. What was going on? I wondered, totally perplexed and shaken by the experience. When I got home, I did some online research. What I found has totally turned my beliefs upside down. I've always thought that ghost stories were hokum, but with what I learned, I'm no longer sure. It turned out that on December 1st, 1974, a TWA Boeing 727, Flight 514, descended prematurely through a low cloud deck and slammed into a rocky outcropping on Mount Weather, Virginia. The aircraft disintegrated with all 92 people on board killed. The flight had originated in Columbus, Ohio and was supposed to land at Washington National Airport. It was diverted to Washington's other airport, Dulles International, because high winds had closed the national airport. According to cockpit voice and flight data recordings, the crew mistakenly believed that air traffic controllers had cleared them to descend to 1,800 feet from their previous altitude fix of 7,000 feet. This error combined with strong downdrafts caused the aircraft to hit the mountains at 1,670 feet above sea level. At the last second, they broke out of the overcast, only to see the rocky and snow-covered mountain looming in their windscreen. The captain's last words to his co-pilot were, get some power on, just moments before the recording abruptly ceased. The place of impact was less than a mile south of where I encountered whoever or whatever it was that I saw almost exactly 30 years later. I don't want to definitely say it was a ghost, but the fact remains that there was someone who appeared to be an airline pilot with a very dated hairstyle wearing a uniform of a defunct business. I'm no longer a trucker, but this has troubled me for many years, and I guess it's just going to have to remain a mystery. Next story. This took place around 5:30 a.m. My husband and I were asleep in our room, and our two boys were in their room. My oldest son, James, came into my bedroom and woke me up. He told me that something had woken him up. I told him to try and lay down and go back and sleep a little bit longer, and I would wake him up when it was time for breakfast. He said okay and walked out of the room and down the hallway to his bedroom. Not even 30 seconds went by when I heard him screaming at the top of his lungs and running as fast as he could. He ran into our room and jumped into the bed. I asked him what was wrong, and he just kept saying over and over, "There's something in my bed." I finally calmed him down and asked him what had happened, and he told me that when he got to his room, he walked through the doorway to get on the bed, and I know this sounds stupid and unbelievable, but he said that there was a giant thing that looked like a monkey just sitting on his bed, staring at him. He also said that it was breathing very hard, so much that you could hear it, and then he told me that, and this really freaked me out, that this thing had the same color eyes that he did, which are blue. I asked him how he knew it was a monkey, and he described it to me, and he looked at me and said, "I stared at it just long enough that I could even see the hair on its knuckles." I know this sounds like crazy talk, but my son has never lied to me. He's very down to earth. I also went and looked at the bed and saw that at the corner where he said this thing was sitting, there was a very deep indent, like something very heavy had been sitting in that spot. Needless to say, that scared me even more. I don't let anyone in that room anymore, and my son now shares his room with a younger brother. Next story. Some years ago, I was visiting the Alamo. The Long Barracks lives up to its name. It's a long, narrow building with entrances at each end, and it's been converted into an extension of the museum, with display cases along each wall. It was not crowded that day. A loose line of people moved down one side and up the other. I was about 30 feet from the front entrance when I looked up to see a man walking toward me between the lines. He was dressed in period costume, rust-colored pants tucked into black boots, a brown belt with a plain brass knuckle, and a white shirt that had a pointed collar with undone strings, ties, dangling down on either side of the front placket. The shirt did not have proper cuffs, instead a button pleat fastened the sleeves at the wrist. He was about 6 feet tall, with dark blonde hair that curled down around his collar. His face was weathered and tanned, and although I couldn't see them well, I believe his eyes were blue. But the most striking thing about him was that he was carrying what looked to me like a sharp buffalo rifle. He was holding it properly, the forestock in his left hand and the muzzle pointed safely toward the floor. The rear vernier sight was folded down. I watched him carefully until he was so close to me that staring would have been rude. I looked down, felt him go by me, and saw his shadow pass. Then when I looked up, he was gone. He was so tall and the crowd was so sparse that I couldn't have lost him in the people around me, and it was so far to the door that he couldn't have crossed the distance during that brief time. I looked away from him only a moment, and he had simply disappeared. I'm fairly certain he was among the Alamo heroes who fell to Santa Anna's army, but to this day I wish I knew which one. Next story. I've always had an interest in the supernatural, but was also a skeptic. But like all skeptics, something happens which makes you a believer. I lived in Austin, Texas, and was staying in an apartment complex that used to be a school for the disabled. I would always hear a ball bouncing and a dining room chair moving in the kitchen. When I would approach the area, it would stop and move to a different area in the kitchen. The noise continued happening, but I just ignored it. But there was an incident when I was taking a nap and I felt someone lay next to me. I turned around to see what it was, but there was nothing there, just an indentation in my mattress. I got scared, ran to my mother's bedroom and told her about it. She believed me and told me that the same thing was happening to her. A couple of nights later, I was sleeping in my bedroom, and there was a bathroom that connected to it. I had the light on while I slept because, at this point, I was scared out of my mind. All of a sudden, I woke up with the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. I was sleeping on my stomach. My face was turned towards the wall. The pain I felt was in my back. It felt as if someone was trying to get up from my back. And it was. My whole body was paralyzed. I just couldn't move. I was screaming on the inside, but nothing was coming out. I could see something on me, a glowing light. My brother was sleeping in the living room at the same time, and I was thinking if only I could scream, I would wake him up, and he would come in there and help me, but nothing. The ghost kept trying to get up from my body, and the more and more he tried, the more it hurt. Finally, he arose, and I was able to move. I turned around on my bed and looked and saw him. The ghost was a little boy, dressed in white. He had a bowl-type haircut, like back in the old days. He looked and smiled and disappeared. As soon as he did, I ran into the living room and woke up my brother, and of course, he thought I was dreaming. There was no way I was dreaming that. Now I knew who was moving the chairs and bouncing the ball in the kitchen and laying next to me in bed. The good thing was we moved away from that place shortly thereafter. Next story. I worked at Camp Roberts in California. There's a base there that was built in the 1940s and was used for basic training. The base was built in a matter of weeks and still stands to this day. On this base, there used to be a full-functioning hospital and the 200-300 block. 9 buildings still stand from the Grand Hospital. 8 of the 9 are in a locked, gated area. These buildings take about 2 minutes to walk from one side of the building to the other. The buildings were at one time connected by covered wooden walkways that have since been taken down. Only one still shows evidence of these walkways, Building 308. They took out the hallway and made steps and put in soda machines on the old platform. Next to Building 308, to its left is Building 307. Behind Building 308 is Building 315. Behind 307 is Building 305. Diagonally from the back of Building 307, about 50 feet is Building 303. Next to 303 is Building 304. All buildings have entrances on the end of the buildings. Only in Buildings 303 and 304 is the building not built like one giant hallway. One night, as always, my coworker and I had to lock up. But on this night, we worked late and it was already dark. We had to go into each building and make sure that both doors were locked. I had Building 307 and 305. He took 308 and 315. I locked up 305 first and went on to 307. When I entered what we call the center of the compound after locking 307, I saw him on the platform of Building 308 heading towards 315. I went towards Building 308 to tell him to hurry up. Mind you, Building 307 and 305 are like 20 feet from each other. He disappeared from my view behind the soda machines. I walked up the platform, but no one was there. It was all open space. You would be able to see anyone get down on the other set of stairs. I ran over to Building 315 to see him walking back from the other end of the building. That's when I realized the person I saw wasn't him, and that there was no way that anyone else could be in the compound because it's gated and locked. When he walked out of the building, he looked at me and asked, "What's wrong?" I told him that we needed to leave now. As we walked back, I told him what happened, and he laughed at me. We worked there for 6 months. Nothing ever happened like that before or after. We started to turn off the lights to Building 303, since that was the last building left to lock up. He clicked off the light switch to one set of lights that had only one switch, walked to the other wall to turn off the other half of the lights, and the switch to the other set of lights turned back on. I looked at him and said, "I told you, let's go." He ran to the other side of the building, turned off the set of lights that had just turned on, and we ran out of the building. Our boss doesn't believe that those buildings or any other on Camp Roberts is haunted. But me and my co-workers think that's why our boss always goes home before dark. Later on, I came to find out that the hospital was full of people from the war that were there to recuperate from their war injuries or diseases they caught. Boot camp trainees and Italian POWs were housed at Camp Roberts, and that 300 block was the death prep area. Next story. This was a few years back, like in 2005. Me and a friend were out. We were still young, about 15 or 16 years old, and we were sitting in a plot of private land. There used to be a house there which burnt down a few years before. The house was supposedly abandoned when it burnt down. It started to rain, so we took shelter under a large tree. Being lazy, we decided we wanted to sit down. However, it was muddy. My friend said he knew where a few wooden pallets had been dumped. It was just across to the other side of the field over a small broken fence. So we walked down there and climbed over the fence. As soon as I got over the fence, I wasn't happy. The place felt eerie and uncomfortable. Also very cold as opposed to where we had just been. It was a quiet, wooded area. A grassy hill then led down into a lot of overgrown bushes and trees where there was a bunch of wooden pallets. We walked down, picked up the pallet, and started walking back up the hill, my friend in front, me behind him. We had taken about 5 or 6 steps, and my friend turned around to look at me as he had said something, and almost instantly, as he looked at me, his eyes went away from me and directly past me. He went white as a sheet, dropped the pallet, and ran off. Confused, I turned around, and about 10 meters behind me to the left, in the trees, there was a white figure. At first, I thought it may have been a plastic bag caught in the trees. I looked back to my friend and shouted for him to stop being stupid and help me carry the pallet. I then looked back, however, and the white figure was now to the right of me and about 4 meters away, and I could clearly see a white, smoky figure. I dropped the pallet and ran. I have never gone back to that field ever since. I remember the feeling about the place so well. Tingly, cold, uncomfortable, as if you were being watched. A few days later, we found out that when the house was burned, apparently someone had died in the fire. At this point, we hadn't told anyone about what we saw. Also, a few people had said they had seen this thing, that there used to be a rose swing. Many people had, for no apparent reason, let go in mid-swing, fallen and broken a wrist or an arm. Most people just got away with a few cuts and bruises. But what I ask is, did we see a ghost? Is this why it felt so eerie down there? Or is this the reason why people were just letting go of the swing? Was this figure the person that died in the fire? Or was it just a figment of my imagination? We don't speak of that afternoon anymore. Every time I think about it, a chill runs through my body. My eyes water. And I feel the same feeling I felt that very day.